There's a lot more delusion than that. There was a lot more delusion than
that. Oh, in the Reagan year. In the Reagan years?
No, I think in the Bush years.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Totally.
Totally.
Back to the Middle East.
Yes.
I don't know, we talked about that. We talked about that a little bit.
We
already.
Just talked. I mean, basically, we talked about Obama stopping off in Baghdad.
We talked about Iraq and Iran.
And we talked about the fact that he went to Turkey, and everyone thought, "Is this directed at the Muslim world?" And I think it's directed at Turkey and Europe.
He's voting for Turkey to become part of the EU, which is an interesting thing.
Which is the significance of because Turkey's vital part.
Most of Europe is opposed to that.
There's a strong fear of...
Well, because I think Europe is afraid of being overwhelmed culturally by people
who see Muslims as a cultural threat, but also a threat. Like a straight up threat to, you know, their security. They see Muslims as willing to do whatever it takes.
Well, I mean, this is not a new story for them. They've been dealing with this for a long time. Bombings in Paris and Rome and Spain are not new.
Right.
And in England, you know, they're used to it more so from the other what they call the Troubles. But it's been established for a long time. The problem that I have with that, of course, is like it's the backlash to colonialism. I mean, you know, what do they expect? They need to, you know, I've listened to a lot of Europeans who are very critical of the United States, and they're, your country is so racist. I'm like, yeah, it is racist, but at least we're dealing with it. You have, you know, take France, for example. Half the population is of Arabic descent or other, and yet officially that's virtually unrecognized. It was virtually unrecognized until they had burned most of the country to the ground, and then they're like, oh, why are they frustrated? I'm like, I wonder. Maybe you should recognize what is going on in your own country.
I mean, there's a whole school of thought that the problems that we face now on a terrorism front are based in the colonialism of the continent, and then our
manipulating. Well, I think you can probably draw a direct line from it. I mean, you know, the British being some of the most guilty, but many others as well, and then us sort of picking up in the same territories. How can we not see a through line?
Right. So the part that cracked
me, Pakistan, India, I mean, that's clearly an inheritance from the British and the division of those places.
The problem I have is that, I mean, the thing that scared me the most was when Tony Blair went along with Bush's war in Iraq.
Yes.
Just completely ignoring
the situation
in the Middle East.
The British role in the Middle East, and also the situation for England with the number of people of Islamic
Muslim descent or
heritage there in from all these countries in England. I mean, that must have seemed like the ultimate disrespect.
Yeah.
And, you know, hence the bombings they've experienced.
It's true. And actually, you know, the thing that
I'm not saying that I agree with people bombing the country and really, frankly, if you're that discontent, get the fuck out. But, you know,
the thing that I always found hard, and I hated that there is, I think the only person who actually really, of the main, quote-unquote, mainstream candidates, the only one that actually really spoke clearly about this was Ron Paul in the Republican debates. He got ganged up on so hard where he said these actions lead to terrorism.
Right, 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 right.
And Rudy just took it and ran with it. It was before he had realized he was voted off the island. Before the whole thing.
Rudy had way too many problems, but we won't go there.
But he was one of those people that said, no, you know, when you do these things, when you destabilize countries in the name of corporate interests, when you have a narrowly defined national interest that guides your policies to either ignore certain things or to exploit certain things, you get this.
Exploit certain things at the expense of the people. Yeah, it just doesn't make sense. And that's one of the things that I'm concerned about with Afghanistan. I mean, like, you know, we have seen Charlie Wilson's war, if you will.
Right.
What we sort of coerced the Soviet Union into, and it really brought them to their knees.
Right.
And then spawned a generation of people who hate them and us.
Right.
So, what have we? I mean, I'm trying to figure out what we're doing right now that is gonna. I mean, there's a lot of talk about helping people.
There's an aid package to Afghanistan and an aid package to Pakistan that they're talking about, an economic aid package.
But just economic, no cultural, no, nothing specific, no plan to help build schools or infrastructure.
Well, they're trying to use the NATO forces for that. NATO did pledge 5,000 more troops, but non-combat roles.
Right.
And, Obama said, don't laugh at that. Don't laugh that off. That's significant. Those are things that we don't have to do now with our troops.
Well, that's a fair point. And it does make it a little less specific.
I think when you get into things like Pakistan, let's just take Pakistan and Afghanistan, really Afghanistan. There's so much to benefit different interests from that place remaining an ungoverned mess that you can't see. Like, there are oil interests. There are
benefits
interests.
For whom?
Excuse me?
I'm saying benefits for...
Well, some would say...
Which monsters?
Corporations.
Yeah.
Some would say organized crime. Some would say that the CIA can't possibly run its operation based on the money it gets from the government solely.
Well, we've always suspected that.
It has dirty arms and drugs, spigot of money. And so there's a chance that Afghanistan is nothing more than window dressing. I think he wants to spend $800 billion over 4 years in economic aid. It's just window dressing on a policy, honestly, when I look at Afghanistan,
to maintain a destabilized region, while cleansing it simultaneously,
to maintain a military presence that attacks the ungovernable regions,
right?
Which is what they basically narrowed their interests down to. They're talking about moderate deals with moderate,
Well, see, this is where I'm troubled because it sounds like everybody else's approach to these things.
Yeah.
Keep them in the dark ages, manipulate what's there to your benefit. The people be damned. Kill the ones that are really troublesome. Whatever they're calling themselves this year.
Right. Well, if you look at how Obama laid out or his team laid out the first 100 days, they went through the basics of an outline of reforming the economics of the United States. And they went through the basics of some form of addressing our current economic crisis. And when they got the last of it out, which was, fuck you, General Motors, file for bankruptcy, Chrysler, get out of town by sunset.
Right.
They pivoted to, here's our new Afghanistan policy, and we're going to the G20.
Right.
So now we're in the beginning of trying to figure out, well, what are they really thinking about doing with Afghanistan? Before they did their full review of Afghanistan policy, they committed 17,000 more troops. To which he said on 60 Minutes, that was possibly the hardest thing I had to do because I didn't even have the benefit of the full review. But everyone knew that the full review was headed towards More military.
Which is something he'd always talked about.
Yeah.
So,
which is the part that cracks me up.
But he's being consistent. I can't say that he isn't.
Well, that's what cracks me up is all these people who criticize him for what he's doing in Afghanistan now. And
they weren't listening.
It was very clear. And I think he knew he was getting the advantages of the first half of his sentence during the campaign. And no one was paying attention to the second half. He would always say, I'm going to get us out of Iraq so we can concentrate on Afghanistan.
And to some degree, Pakistan.
Yes.
Yeah.
And,
true.
He now that all of a sudden people see him concentrating militarily on Afghanistan, they're alarmed. That was always what he said. It was always what made him a certain amount palatable to the establishment in the United States.
Right. That appreciates such a...
By the way, speaking of budget numbers, he proposed a $534 billion budget. For the military,
right.
Up $15 billion. Well, it threatens to cut programs, missile or weapons programs that will, of course, never be cut. He proposed a $534 billion. Like everyone, you should have. If you didn't know this was coming, then you weren't paying attention.
I think people weren't. I mean, we talked about this earlier. We are operating under a spell of our own creation in a way, and. It's I was seeing it everywhere. Like, you know, there was some little blurb that was said to me, "Mr. Obama, where are you? You've got to stop this. You've got to stop that." It's like people think that now there's this pent-up desire to change everything,
right,
whatever it may be, and he's supposed to be the fairy godfather that will do that. And yet, you're right. I mean, he laid out a very specific plan of action, and he's following it pretty closely.
Yeah.
It's been very consistent.
The thing that I find interesting about that is, you know, there are two things that people like stand up and I forgot which movie. Maybe was it Casablanca when the guy goes, "I'm shocked that there's gambling going on."
Yes, round up the usual suspects.
People are shocked that Obama's a politician, and that he was going to have, you know, a semi-Clinton-esque military stance on the world is dumbfounding to me. As a person who wanted a competing candidate to win the nomination, I was astounded at what he could get away with politically. He was gifted. He's a very gifted politician.
Absolutely.
Once he figured out how to be the man from hope but attack the Clintons, it was lights out. And, you know, he decided to outflank McCain on military and saying, "I would bomb Pakistan without their approval." You know, causing everyone, you know, all the whole right to go, "Well, you can't go do that," you know?
Yeah,
Something that I'm sure Bush has said in one form or another throughout the years.
I also wanted to talk about the fact that he signed that waiver that allows the PLO to retain its office in Washington, D.C. in the same day that he was celebrating the Seder at the White House.
I didn't know he did that.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
That is really interesting.
And
by the way, can you believe that in 44 presidents, this is the first frickin' Seder in the White House that the president will actually attend?
That's pretty amazing.
And that, I mean, it's just mind-blowing to me. I mean,
wow.
You would think at least Clinton.
Yeah.
At least Clinton.
Yeah, Bush, I wouldn't expect that.
Bush, no. And to a certain extent, Reagan, you know, like, he did all sorts of things for ceremonial and symbolic purposes.
Right.
Like, he didn't do a Seder?
But the question I have is that will there be Ramadan or such things in the White House?
No. They said it was. They said that the Seder was part of the fact that he celebrated. In the campaign, he did this, and he said, "Next year we'll do this in the White House."
Ah,
and so he fulfilled his campaign promise.
Got it.
By the way, speaking of fulfilling his campaign promises, I thought that they were going to come back straight to the human interest story. He told 60 Minutes that the dog would come after the NATO summit.
So right.
I figured that they had baked in this free ride from the press after the European tour to come home and announce the dog and have that dominate all form of coverage for about 5 days.
We need the dog to relieve the tension of this madness.
Well, speaking of tension, did you hear that when you poll parties, not the aggregate population, but when you poll party partisans, he's one of the most polarizing presidents?
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. It's fascinating. It's like insane.
Yeah, it's
the split.
Like 20. It's it reminds me of when I was at the maximum hatred for George Bush, and there were like 27% of Democrats, 27% of Democrats approved of George Bush, George W. Bush, and like 80% of Republicans approved of him.
Wow. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm very surprised that that's actually taken root. Because I thought for sure he would have picked up some faction of the Republican Party.
Don't forget why this is the feeling. You know, they feel like they should still be in control. They want control again. They're not going to cede a bit of admiration, and he's going to have to win it.
But you'd think the log cabins would be with them.
Well, they're foolish enough. They're foolish enough to be with Republicans in general. Whatever.
You would think some faction of that party can't be satisfied with their leadership is all over the map.
Give it time, give it time.
Social conservatives should hate.
The reality
Obama.
Is, look at what's happening. As we said to Mark, Sarah, and Bobby in their states, forcing them to take this money. The people need the money. They know. I mean,
right.
So all that grandstanding is blown up in their faces. It's actually derailing them to some degree in their own states.
Right.
So, you know, polls are one thing. I think the way that people are reacting to what's happening to them, especially the mass of people, is something very different.
Right. Well, he still has like a 61% approval rating after Europe. He left with a 66% approval rating. I kind of expected it to go up. I guess it's mathematically impossible for it to go up.
Yeah, well, there was controversy over his little bow to the Saudi king. It's like, whatever. I don't know.
You know, I heard about that second. I didn't hear it. I heard about that in a roundup of criticism.
And again, many of the right wing are characterizing the entire trip as a big groveling apology, which I don't perceive at all.
Yeah, I don't. You know, to get back to what we said originally, I don't see it as any form of weakness. This trip was about, if anything, it was the strength through being able to compromise.
But again, it's going back to what I was saying earlier. I mean, when you are used to somebody with those rootin' tootin' cowboy slogans, which is all about our way or no way, there's no subtlety, there's either this hard line or, you know, a dust-up is going to start,
right.
You know. Yeah, of course, when somebody's actually giving room for discussion, it seems like weakness, but that is not weakness.
Right.
It's subtlety. It's cleverness.
If anything put him in a box this week, outside of the fact that in public, the two things I would say on the international stage that put him in a box was, in public, regardless of what was said behind doors and regardless of what they do in their own countries, Sarkozy and Merkel were anti-stimulus policy on the grounds of the laws of physics. This could be very inflationary. Now, whether they believe that, whether that was for the consumption...
I think, you know, as we said last week, Angela probably does believe it. I mean, it's within the cultural memory. It's not that far away, far back that Germany really suffered to the nth degree because of that.
Right.
And it led to, we know, all sorts of atrocities as well. I mean, you know, they're probably terrified to repeat anything remotely like that.
Right. But, I mean, in the U.S. where he can... where Obama can sort of run the show, run the debate, run the floor, whatever you want, whatever term is more applicable, and win, get the policy across, and get, you know, Americans tend to forget about those things after the vote is done. He wound up kind of getting stuck with people who couldn't be rolled by him.
Right.
I think that was one thing that put him in a corner.
The bigger
week.
Kids.
Yeah,
they're
bigger
story.
Kids. They got different interests.
They have different interests, and it's, you know, there's sovereign nations. I mean, it's a different story.
But then the North Korean missile.
Woo!
That to me was one where it goes back to what Katrina said. How do you stop this? What do you do to stop this? How do you stop this? And you turn, you look at Obama, and you go, I don't know if he knows how he's going to stop the North Koreans from shooting off more missiles.
No one knows. And in fact, many people don't have a problem with it on the global front.
I mean, the
China doesn't have a problem.
It went 2000, well.
You know, Russia doesn't have a problem. Libya doesn't have a problem. I don't know if you can put them in the same.
Iran doesn't have a problem.
Iran doesn't have a problem. But yeah, you know, and of course.
It went 2,000 miles.
Yes,
I mean,
it did.
That's a pretty significant. I mean, whether
it's
that's
significant,
a
even though it fizzled out and fell into the ocean, it is still significant. And it's, you know, of course, given the president huge popularity in North Korea, he was just reelected, and they're having, you know, jubilation in the streets.
A one-way referendum.
Yeah, it's like, who else would you vote for here? But the significance, you know, and then all this, you know, saber rattling. You know, if you do anything, there will be grave steps. I'm not sure what they could possibly do, but they're definitely there's definitely a lot of attempts around the world, in China and Russia. I mean, China particularly are I would put into that same category, to try to put us in our place.
Yes.
Right now, you know, right now during this time. And it's always that way when things are a little rough and there's less food, the wolves hit the floor and fight over the bones. I mean, it's just, you know, so right now, you know, with China talking about replacing us as the global currency and actually trying to take steps in that direction, supporting this action in North Korea and saying, well, hold on. I mean, there is definitely an attempt in many places to shift power.
This is where the beauty of our humongous debt comes into play. China can't just write down their $1 trillion investment and call it a day, because Germany owns a lot.
Yes.
And Japan owns a lot. And I'm pretty sure England owns a significant chunk of our debt. And the prospering emerging nations own. I know South Korea owns a lot of our debt. Now,
right.
Probably not as much dollar for dollar, but per capita, per, you know, the size of their GDP, they probably own a significant chunk of the United States debt.
Right. So it's significant, yeah.
If you decide to turn it into a world currency and cast the U.S. aside, the largest market for your cheap Chinese goods, you have a lot of other countries to reckon with.
Yes.
Which is one of the things that John Murtha, who will It's the sleeper story that I've only mentioned once on the show, will probably be indicted for some form of corruption in the next year or so. John Murtha, the Democrat from Pennsylvania, from I think Pittsburgh, said, we shouldn't be in Iraq because we should be preparing for war with China. The notion being that as the wolves fight over the bones, you go to war. And if someone becomes too prosperous, you decimate, you hurt them, you force them to rebuild, force them to expend on rebuilding.
I'm glad he's not the president.
Yeah, well, I mean, they always called him a peacenik when he was against the Iraq war, and I'm like, you guys are missing the other half of his
sentence. The other half of his sentence, which is, let's take on the big boys.
Listen,
can you imagine?
No, I don't want to go to war against China ever.
First of all.
Economically or military.
I mean, whatever. It doesn't even make sense on so many levels.
But I think that if China decided to throw the dollar overboard, they would face almost a military option in the fact that Japan, Germany, England, the United States, countries that are involved, you know, that depend on us, would all have such a huge economic stake. And the beauty of us screwing up the whole entire world economy is the fact that we've proven how important we are.
We are important.
The U.S. is super important to the world economy going forward. Hey, what did you think? I mean, one of the things mentioned on the show is that, you know, the White House is trying to portray Obama as behind the scenes able to stand his own, to be pretty tough. The article you sent me, Obama tells the bankers,
the only thing standing between you and the pitchforks is this administration.
Yes.
And I think that's pretty tough. He only served them a glass of water.
And no refills.
No refills. There's a little symbolism for you.
Yeah. For anyone who didn't know this, there was an article on Yahoo, I think last Sunday or last Monday, and Steve's been the guy who's always been able to call what the ramifications of something or what will most likely happen. China and the dollar, you know, loss of leverage against the country that owns most of your debt, etc. Like, these have been Steve's ideas from the start in the show, and they've borne to be true.
Sadly.
When we were talking about the tough love for automakers versus the tough love for bankers, Steve said, you know, it's coming. I can bet you that it's coming. And I don't know why they made it such a small story. It should have been a bigger
story. People are still making hay with the idea that it hasn't happened, but it has. And it's been pretty goddamn tough. And guess what? It seems to be working. I mean, here's Wells Fargo getting their shit together.
Yeah, Wells Fargo's claiming that they made $2 to $3 billion
in
this quarter.
And it's having an effect.
Being one of the quote-unquote insolvent candidate for nationalization. But in this article that just showed up on Yahoo and didn't really get as much fanfare.
Didn't get as much play as it should have.
They described that meeting that I thought was a freaking photo op.
No.
They had the
I think they thought there was a photo op, but they got their asses kicked.
Yeah, well, when he announced it, I thought this is part of the rallying on the country.
But see, this is one of the things that we have to be careful about, because we're so far from all these things in their actuality. We are subject to so much propaganda, so much spinning based on everyone's agendas, right, left, center, whatever, that it's hard to sort of sift through to the hard facts and then make a real judgment.
Right.
You know, that's always what I'm grappling with every week. It's like, okay, I see all the, I'm listening to all this stuff. I'm trying to discern the motivation for the direction it's being pushed in, and then find out what really happened.
Right.
And then make my own judgment. So.
And they let a little bit of that out. And I'm not sure the article didn't quote the sources. It made you feel like they got inside the White House and outside the White House corroboration on what
right.
went on in that room.
Yeah, because there were a couple of bankers who were quoted.
Yes.
And they get a lot of there really quickly.
But basically they all showed up in the White House, and the president spoke for about, I think, 2 minutes or something, and basically, you know, made a statement to them. And then said, "Now, if any of you all would like to speak, go ahead."
Yeah.
And each banker, and we're talking about huge bankers now.
Yes.
Were given one glass of warm, room temperature
water. Room temperature water with no refill.
No refill. And the quote they got out of it was, "The only thing standing between you and the pitchforks is my administration."
That's right.
But there were others where he challenged them, where they said, "You don't understand. We need to do this or we need to do that." And he said, "This will not fly." And I was like, first of all, it was great propaganda. I loved it. I ate it up. I thought, all right, this is pretty darn cool that he's saying this. Whether or not you believe it happened is a totally different
story. Well, it did happen. I think this did happen. I think, unfortunately, it's not serving certain people's purposes to have this be the main story. It's more effective for whomever, from George Soros on down, to say he's missed the opportunity, he's being too soft. He's making money from that. People are making money from this. I mean, people are profiting politically. I mean, that's what I'm saying. We have to be careful
where the criticism comes
from. Where the criticism is coming from. The actions are, we can understand, are factual.
Right.
How they're being interpreted is all partisan on so many levels.
I just think on symbolism, even though they let the 90% tax against the AIG bonuses die a quiet and sheltered death, I think that what you're seeing here...
And again, for me, AIG, I'm not so concerned about the bonuses, which I think actually make sense in some cases. I'm more concerned about the fact that they're paying out millions of dollars, multiple millions of dollars, to all these other fucked up banks around the world, and nobody's talking about that.
Well, you know, the argument was that the White House jumped on board the fury over the bonuses to hide the fact that AIG had to pay out to international banks, not based in the United States banks.
Right.
TARP funds, essentially.
Right.
But the reality, and then also that some banks were recipients of TARP funds and AIG funds because AIG underwrote the bad, but then the banks are getting money anyway. And the White House had an interest in making it all about the pitchforks
right,
as opposed to that. I personally think that the American public is sophisticated enough to go, this is an international bank. This is an international insurance company. There are international banks that it...
Well, many of the people who received bonuses were in London, they were in Paris, they were everywhere.
That's what goes. If someone in another country took an insurance policy out on a credit default swap based on faulty premises,
yes,
and the ticket got called and they had to pay it, that's what happens when the U.S. backs up AIG. That's it. I don't think that the population would be all that angered about it. But the point is that I think that what they're trying to get across this week is, behind closed doors, very businesslike meeting with how do we pronounce that correctly? President.
The Russian president. I can never get it right. I can't get the Iranian president's name right either. I'm such a hick.
No, and that he, was tough with the Iraqi leadership, and he's sort of being tough with the Pentagon in that he wants to cut certain prized military weaponry.
But he's talking about raising salaries and benefits for the enlisted military.
Oh, sure.
Which is about damn time. All the Bush administration talked about their love and pride in these people, nothing happened for them.
Bush administration, the thing that they did best was talk about an issue with great concern and then underfund it, including
right.
their war.
That's true. That's true. People were. I remember people going up, reporting about people without proper equipment. Sometimes people in their communities would raise the money for these people to be outfitted individually. That is obscene.
The thing that really blew me away was that story came out in the 2004 election, and somehow John Kerry managed to lose. Like, how do you lose to a guy when it's a human interest story on 2020 that a community is buying body armor for assault? Like,
yeah.
It reminded me of, like, when I was a kid, and the very few times I was on a sports team, and my parents found out, oh, you have to pay for all this stuff.
Right.
It doesn't come with it. And it was like they treated the war that way. Your son's going off to war, or your daughter.
If he wants to build a proof vest, you better have a fundraiser.
Yeah, you gotta go down to the local outdoor store
and get
his number to, and his name, to turn on the back, like you would get a jersey.
Jesus.
But anyway, the only thing I like about things right now is that when you hear Bush, it's almost unfathomable. Like, when I see something that he, when I see someone said this about the Obama trip abroad, which I kind of agree with, but I don't agree with it in a critical sense. Of course this was a successful trip for him. He followed Bush.
Right.
And so, like, on all these issues, of course you can claim a certain amount of progress. If you're giving body armor to troops when they should have had it in the beginning. Of course, you're following George Bush. So whatever. I saw a great thing. I saw a great Charlie Rose where he spent the hour between Carter's Secretary of State and I want to say Brzezinski and
Brzezinski. Yeah.
Zbigniew
Brzezinski.
There you go. Yes, he was on.
We're digging back into time now,
dude. He was on with Henry Kissinger.
Wow.
And it was fun to watch them say the same thing, but beg to differ. Mine is different. And then I thought, this really fits into all the criticisms of the fact that there's sort of only one party that governs us, which I strongly believe they're not. But it was really.
It's not so much that there's one party, but when it boils down, it's like we are governed by one class.
We're definitely governed by one class, and when it comes down to the super ugly things, they both agree.
Yeah.
If it's secret bombings, if it's poisoning.
We see this demonstrated as we speak.
Yeah. They see eye to eye. Where they don't see eye to eye on is, oh, wow, no, mountaintop mining, where they take the whole top.
Mountaintop mining, forestry, you know, environmental things, cultural things,
yeah.
Abortion, gay marriage, blah, 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 blah. It's the cultural differences that make the differences in the parties, I think,
right.
Really more than anything else.
Yeah, it is. And well, I mean, I think sustainability is, too.
Well, sustainability, yes, yes.
I did wonder this week if the fourth state, was it Vermont, to basically strike down a gay marriage ban.
Right.
Is
Iowa, where else was it?
It's Iowa, Vermont, Massachusetts, and
New Hampshire? Was it?
Okay. Is it New Hampshire?
It's another very liberal state.
Yeah, it's like, but the part that, well, Iowa not being liberal.
Surprising that, yeah.
And actually, if you really listen to what that court said, it was basically like, this is written so, in such a way that it violates the state constitution. They didn't say that. The other half of that sentence would be, you could probably write something.
You could write something else, but stop this.
Constitutional
stop this nightmare.
The big thing that went on in Ohio in 2004 was a gay marriage initiative that helped drive people to the polls, and those people tended to vote for George Bush. I fear that we might be loading, because they spent the efficacy of that issue on 2004. In a certain way, they bankrupted the party of that socially polarizing issue to get future rewards, because at that point, they had kind of, Rove had engineered enough of those to push turnout up, because he has those crazy models that said if it goes up a point here and it's 2 points there, we'll win.
Right.
So they kind of left the Republican Party without their divisive wedge issue that would bring out voters, and I feel as loading up the shotgun again, even if it's for something that will fail, even if it's for an initiative that will eventually be thrown out of the courts. They could. We're starting to load up. All right. Well, let's try to vote on it again in Iowa.
See, I wonder, and I agree. Agree that this is going to become a hot button issue again, but I think that I'm more concerned about the economy remaining an issue longer than anybody anticipates. I'm concerned about another thing that happened, which is that China hacked into our electrical grid.
Yeah, do you believe that actually was?
Well, it sort of came and went. The story kind of was out there, and then it was
disappeared.
Stopped being discussed.
The small
and the White House is not
denying it.
Well, they're not acknowledging or denying. They're not commenting. Yet at the same time, the Pentagon is prepping for economic warfare, and this is one of the scenarios they're getting ready for. So I don't know.
The future of crime is white collar. There's no question.
It's going to be technological. This is the problem. This is what we've seen with 9/11. There was a book that I read in 1999 called The Lexus and the. What was it called? The Lexus and the Olive? Lexus and the Olive Tree. And it was about the difference between the First World and the Third World, and how literally. And this is the interesting thing about the book. It was written in 1999. The guy predicted terrorism sure. like we are experiencing now on a regular basis. He talked about the reasons for it, which I need to go back to because I haven't looked at this book since then. But I remember him, remember being very startled by this comment and then looking at it again in 2001 going, oh shit, this guy's nailed it to the point. But, you know, he talked about how the First World Nations are so vulnerable in this way because we depend on systems that are easily disrupted.
Right.
When we tore, when those buildings went down, it tore huge nerves out of our system and sent our economy sputtering here and throughout the West. And, you know, a planned and sustained attack on systems could be very, very easily wrought.
Right.
You don't have to do drop nuclear bombs. You don't have to send poison gas. And you could, a couple of well-placed bombs at the right site of a dam and this power plant, that you're done.
I had the benefit of hearing about this tonight on the Rachel Maddow show before I came over. And she said the small exclamation point to the grid hacking story, which I passed by as like, are you really? Was it in Silicon Valley today or last night or recently, someone cut fiber optic cables that rendered a large chunk of Silicon Valley without telecommunications, essentially.
Do we know who this was? Why it was done?
They said that they knew where to go. They opened up this thing. This like it kind of was like a sewer type of like a metal thing, like a lid, basically. Went down, had some sort of a heavy metal cutter, cut these things that were about, I don't know, a quarter inch or an inch and a half wide, and left. And it took out internet, phone, communications, cable, television. It was a significant. Now they said the Sprint was in charge of that. They said there. Yes, we've had accidental things like this happen before, but a direct act of vandalism we've not seen.
This is another interesting thing, and this is getting off of the international front. I mean, you know, the United States has also been known to create its own domestic terrorists once or twice.
Yes,
you know, we've already seen this, you know, in this year, more people have died in mass shootings than there have in Iraq. So we've also got to take a look at what we're creating and take some steps as well.
I was very surprised that, well, first of all, let me say I'm horrified by the fact that it seems like weekly now, some person who's lost their job shoots their whole family and kills themselves. Shoots a whole town up. And
this has been going on since last year, every time you turn around. And for me, it's like, where is the fiber of the people? Okay, I mean, it's difficult, and I'm not judging them, but I just wonder about the inner fiber, how this level of despair takes them to such a degree. I just don't understand. I'm not.
I think it's the same.
We've had numerous incidents like this in LA alone.
Yes, it's true. I don't think that it's the same causes and that they are morally equivalent. But despair is what leads people to do this, and you don't know why. I mean, I could guess why. And despair is what leads to terrorism when there's no hope for the future.
We're coming full circle. This is exactly the theory of the Lexus and the olive tree.
Yeah, those two are tied
together. When people feel disconnected, when people feel there is no hope, they want to either hurt the people that they see as their oppressors and destroy their prosperity, mm-hmm. or they destroy themselves. We see it in inner cities. It's not a surprise that people are self-destructive when they feel like there's no way to get out of the cycle they're in.
Yeah.
So here we are.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's one of the arguments that they whisper about not wanting Turkey to become part of the EU, is that they have a population that, if desperate enough, is stereotypically going to do whatever it takes, by all means necessary. And
well,
the Europeans, I think, I don't know, I'm not judging whether this is rightfully or wrongly, but a lot of Europeans have said that. That's their big fear of that population.
Well, I've heard Europeans in Europe say worse, which is that they're not even European anyway.
Right.
Why do they want to be a part of this union, and how do we justify that?
Which, by the way, I know people are going to, you know, there's so much criticism of Obama from certain sectors. The fact that he said Turkey is a vital part of Europe, he said that.
Yeah.
Then that's when I knew that speech was not geared towards diffusing the hatred of the United States worldwide. It was...
No, certainly not, because if anything, you know, from that point going west...
Well, he was putting Europe on notice that his country, his administration believes that Turkey is that important, and if they want to be in the EU, for Christ's sake, unless it's just lip service, unless he does not back it up. But well, that's such a big step.
Right now it's strategic for him.
It is strategic for him, but I think they also see, I mean, Turkey's been such a key, if you want to talk about the, one of the key launching points for the United States' empire, it's being able to have the ability to stage missiles and or launch attacks from Turkey.
Yeah.
Having Turkey be a friend enables them to put the button on their loop around other powers.
Right. So, well, this, I mean, Turkey is a strategic location. It has been for how long?
So, but I also think to a certain extent...
And also, I mean, you know, again, I mean, again, it's sort of naive for people to even... people, or I shouldn't say naive, but people forget how many European Muslims there are in Eastern Europe,
right.
How many there are in Russia, how many there are in China. There's a whole... I mean, if you pull the maps of nations, I mean, the lines of nations away and look at this thing culturally, there's a whole other...
Oh, sure.
Way to look at these regions.
Yes.
And probably more natural way and a more realistic way to look at them.
Right.
So
the question I have is, where is the moderate leader on the Muslim side? Where is the... Because the other criticism of Turkey is it's a secular state that does whatever it can to oppress religious beliefs as much as possible. Same with Egypt. They try to oppress as much...
Yeah, but Egypt is already getting a lot of... There's a lot of fundamentalism popping up over there.
The problem I have with the way Egypt does it, and I'm sure it's the same in Turkey, is it's a downward spiral. The more you clamp down on that stuff, the more it breeds that stuff.
Right.
And you have to find the way to release the pressure.
Well, when someone's already feeling like a victim and you fulfill them by victimizing them...
Yes.
It's done.
So how do you undo that without letting... Because then the argument they make, and some people say it's a false choice, but I'm not necessarily sure it is that as you release the... Let's say you decide to release the pressure, then you're now kind of allowing your enemies of the state... breathing room. So how do you diffuse the...
It's tricky, because as you say, repression, unless you're going to repress completely, you know, always there's the possibility that something wiggles out and finds its way to you and cuts your throat.
Yes.
So I don't know. It's tricky.
And
at the same time, when you release pressure, if you do it in the right way, you also diffuse pressure.
Right. But what is that socially right way?
I don't know.
I mean, you're talking about like a pressure cooker type of pressure. If you try to take the lid off of a pressure...
You'll burn yourself and everything around
you. And if you hit that release valve, it takes a while before
it starts
shooting off.
That's why I'm not a politician.
No.
I don't aspire to rule a country by force.
These, by the way, are, I think, the issues that Obama faces that are intractable, that lead him to criticism, heavy criticism from idealists, heavy criticism from people who are right, and also... He can't, unless I'm overstating it, I don't think he can lip service these issues as Reagan might have, as Bush 1 did, as Clinton surely did. I mean, some of the most progressive things I ever heard came from George W. Bush's mouth, but he used them in this to perpetuate. When he said we can't just support dictatorships because they are our allies, but they're the enemy of their people, I thought, for Christ's sake, that's something that I've been saying for years.
Right.
Unfortunately, he didn't mean it.
He didn't mean it, but it sounded really...
Way.
Yeah.
But, so the point being is that these are all people who would take one of the hardest problems and turn the other way, lip service the freedom part of it, and turn the other way when what had to be done in the name of American interest. I don't think Obama has that luxury at this point. He may, but I don't think so. That despair that causes people to kill themselves is an economic despair and a fear. That, if the whole entire world, they're saying that...
Well, I mean, it is and it isn't. I mean, of course, I mean, here's Saudi Arabia, who, as wealthy as it is, funding all sorts of monstrosities around the world. So, I mean, there are exceptions. Some of it is just ideological.
But we're in a zone where
But the United States is pretty wealthy, and a lot of what we do is based on our ideology as well. So, I agree and I disagree, if you know what I'm saying.
I understand what you're saying, but where I'm coming from is, though, if all economic trends lead downward, then there's going to be more despair in this world.
Yeah, I think we're saying the same thing about that.
Yeah, we're headed into a zone where this is just going to, the sentiment's just going to get worse. Apparently Europe isn't going through what we went through or are going through. They're behind us.
They're behind us.
Which means if they're going to go through January.
And things are a mess.
December, January, and February of this year, that they have yet to do that, holy cow, man, I don't even want to know. I thought they were right there with us.
No.
I thought that they were...
The toxicity is just now taking effect. I shouldn't say just now taking effect. It's already knocked out Iceland and,
Iceland and Ireland.
And Ireland.
But
those were small and they got it over their heads.
They had an oof.
Thought they were big boys and now they're not.
I have one more topic.
On the eastern side, the same thing's been happening. So, it's causing all that stress within the 16 nations of the EU. You've got this sort of like resentment from Germany, resentment from France, and it's sort of creating some interesting international friction in that group. And it was something I remember saying, of course, in my predictions when the Euro first emerged. I said, the minute there's a problem, these people are going to start chafing at the bit and start hating one another. It's right. Actually going to cause a rise in nationalism, I think. And
right.
I don't think we've seen anything like it yet, but it'll emerge.
Well, yeah, because they don't have a common interest. When the shit hits the fan.
When the shit hits the fan, everybody becomes very, very self-involved.
Yeah.
And, it could get ugly.
We were lucky that it was just a bunch of hyperbole, largely at G20, that France was hurling.
I didn't think it was anything
really
but that.
Policy.
It was a loudmouth cultural response from the little Napoleon.
I'm just saying, if you put some real, policy teeth behind that rhetoric, we'd have some conflict with them.
We would. They can't afford it, though.
I know.
It was bullshit. It was posturing.
I had one more thing I wanted to ask you about from this week that I can't remember now. That was significant, but it was. I think it would have something to do with business, but I can't remember. The only thing I know off the top of my head that is not what I was going to mention was apparently Fiat and Chrysler can make a deal.
Wow.
The chairman of Chrysler said, "I'm pretty sure we can do this in 30 days."
Now what's this going to wind up being, though?
Well, it's going to wind up being, we're going to go bankrupt anyway.
So it's just going to be an international mess.
Well, they...
And what is Fiat doing right now?
Every business...
That's what I'm wondering about. They're closing plants all over the place.
Seriously, you'd want Chrysler to go to Nissan, but... Because the Nissan-Peugeot relationship is actually pretty good. But most business analysts are like, there's nothing in it for Fiat to do. There's no advantage for Fiat to get involved until bankruptcy. There's zero. And because they just pick up the pieces at fire sale prices.
Right.
And only the pieces that they want. And then General Motors is supposed to be basically fast-tracking internal processes for bankruptcy. With the wink, wink, nudge, nudge from the White
bankruptcy
House.
To reorganize or bankruptcy to disappear?
Bankruptcy to reorganize.
Yeah.
The deal is that I think that the White House is saying we'll make it a structured reorganization that we can announce over like a 3-day period in which you'll be out in a short period of time, 3-4 weeks, and we'll back you up the whole entire way. But the whole point is that they can't get bondholders or the unions to the table on deals, and this to me is
so will Fiat do what they did with those banks? Was that you that was talking about the banks where they came in?
The one of the best. I listened to it again.
Fascinating.
If you listen to anything besides this show, you should listen to This American Life.
Oh right, that's what it was. Yeah, I couldn't remember.
And they did a. It was Scenes from a Recession, and they Jesus. Took it step by step of how the FDIC takes over a failed bank. And little do you know, the failed bank doesn't know they're going to be taken over. The FDIC shows up at like 4 or 5 o'clock on a Friday and
they says, can't, they probably
you
can't
over.
Let them know.
They can't.
Yeah.
They said they cover that. I finally heard it from beginning to end. They can't tell the organization that they're taking over that they're going to take it over because
oh,
all
God,
sorts
you'd
of stuff
reach, you'd reach, you'd create havoc.
Yes. And they can't let anyone know because they fear basically documents being shredded or things being hidden or the bank being looted from the inside, and then they also fear a run on the bank.
Right.
So they go in the afternoon on a Friday, and at close of business they announce that they are taking over. They have already lined up the buyer of the good parts of the bank, and they come in with a team of people, and within 2 or 3 days it reopens as the other bank.
That's so amazing. I wonder what Fiat will do with the pieces.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. If you really look at what Chrysler's product line has to offer, all their crappiest product is stuff that's easily replaceable by Fiat product.
Mm.
Now, if Fiat manufactured in the U.S. and had some degree of maintainability to their cars, they could get back into the world's largest or one of the world's largest auto markets that they have not been in since the early 80s.
Not for a long, long time. They were, you know, they had a moment where it was just all about them.
Yeah.
Even though it was still Fix It Again, Tony.
Yes. Which it was.
Yeah, it was. Because they were great, fast, high-strung cars that would have, bing, and you'd have to take them to the garage.
And nothing ever made sense on them. I tried to work on Fiat and Alfa Romeo.
Oh, you can't. You have to take them to somebody who knows what to do.
Yeah. But what Chrysler is strong in, this is where it gets really twisted, are those big rear-wheel drive cars that they weren't making before Mercedes bought them. And those big rear-wheel drive cars are based on two platforms ago, Mercedes-Benz products. They're based on like the mid to late 90s E-Class.
Okay.
So, in this really twisted way, Fiat gets these big rear-engine vehicles that they could never afford to engineer themselves that come off of Mercedes brain trust, however old they may be. And the shittiest part of the Chrysler lineup can be jettisoned for some really cute cars. Whether they run or not, the Fiats are really cute. And Fiat gets right back into the U.S. It's sort of a good deal. It's just who's going to buy a Fiat?
Depends on the price line.
I mean, really.
If it looks really good and goes really fast and
it's relatively inexpensive.
And they can learn a few things from the Americans.
If they're made in the U.S., then there's an argument for it. I mean, I don't know. It's an interesting prospect, though. And also one that's just ripe for comedy. I mean,
Without a doubt.
Fiat Chrysler. The solution for the United States automobile industry is the K car. And they don't want to do it. The K car that saved Chrysler in the 80s was a really simple front-wheel drive car. It was really inexpensive to make, and they could build variations from economy hatchbacks to sedans, really shitty, thin, terribly made sedans. And the three of them should just get together and reinvent the K car or the Model T, call it a day.
The Model T.
And just throw it out there, yeah. Just a simple car that's really inexpensive to make.
It would be a great thing.
They were actually really relatively reliable.
I'm starting to see all those really super, 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 super tiny European cars on the road now.
Like the smart cars?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted
more
one
and
until
more.
I realized, no.
No. You don't want one. None until the SUVs disappear.
And actually, there's supposedly a moderating of the sales losses on SUVs because gas prices have stayed low. But anyway, all right, we are definitely over. The first part of our show didn't record, as you might have noticed, because I didn't hit the right button.
That's okay, we weren't talking about anything important.
Yeah.
I was just swearing a lot.
This week, he was Obama. I don't see him as Reagan or Carter.
I think as we said last week, the training wheels are off. He's emerging as something that we can almost... I mean, yes, the contours of his policy are not clearly defined yet, but we are seeing a consistency in terms of him fulfilling promises. He's following this sort of activist democratic agenda that he's been clear about from the beginning, but as you said, the second half of the sentence is not always what we wanted to pay attention to, but that part's being fulfilled as well.
Right, oh yeah. If you weren't paying attention, you are now.
Go back and listen again.
Yeah. I think that if you look at him in terms of foreign policy especially, while it's not enough, and while I'm sure he's doing horrible things in the background, even though they announced they're not doing any more secret prisons, things that he's done in mainstream politics... I'm not talking about...
But don't forget, he doesn't have to know that they exist. There are ways for them to exist anyway. Reagan didn't know they existed.
Yeah, I know. The things that they're probably doing that they say they're not doing are terrible. But in terms of the United States two-party system, things that Obama has said this week are about as far as you can go. Muslim, we're not at war with Islamism, we're not at war with Muslims, whatever that actual statement was. Turkey should be part of Europe. I'm here to listen and lead. We are getting out of Iraq. These are significant for our two-party system. They're about as far as you can push the envelope, whether you like it or not. That's about as far as you can go outside of truly taking like a kamikaze mission and hoping that the public likes it when you're done.
Right.
That's about it. And that's and if you, as a Hillary supporter, I can tell you right now, I know she wouldn't have said half of these things. She would have been hedging her bet against a right wing run against her.
And it probably it would have happened because they know how to attack her.
Yeah.
They don't have a beat on the sky yet.
Which is the other most significant thing of the week. The Republicans have, again, I think the beauty of this friggin' trip overseas was he's knocked them off their stride again.
I mean, they've had a lot to say, as we've established. They've had a lot to say.
But it's not getting any traction.
No, still, I know.
I mean, I heard O'Reilly say tonight that there's no leader of the Republican Party, just us pundits. Like, we have to step up as
well,
the right
just
media.
Us pundits, including dear old Rush.
Yes.
Still popping daddy.
Rush and Laura Ingraham and John, the whole Fox News network. I mean, he basically said we don't have a politician that is charismatic, that captivates. It's up to us to define. He's getting no resistance from the Republicans because they can't get traction. And that,
well, I mean, look at it. We just talked about the troika. These boobs can't get anywhere.
I know.
Every time they start running, they slip.
I tell you right
now. I mean, and the facts are, like you say, the fact that Levi Johnston, is that his name?
I think his name, yeah.
Or Johnston, I can't remember the last name, but I mean, I'm doing that deliberately. I think it's Johnston, but whatever. He's being interviewed on Tyrone Banks' show.
Saying he mostly used condoms. Mostly.
And just the fact that she was really mean and really snobbish, and then once they were done with the election, that she kind of said, "You're done. You don't have to marry him." I mean, they used this kid. And it was pretty clear. And it's been, and that has gotten some traction. And that people were making jokes about how there would have been a White House wedding if Sarah had had her way, because, you know, she would have needed this to back herself.
Yeah.
But now the facts are out there. I mean, and also this guy, did they talk about the fact that this guy's mother was...
She was like a...
Indicted for like 6 felony drug counts?
Was she like OxyContin or something or other?
Well, same as Rush, but different application of the law. Isn't that fascinating?
I mean, like, I don't really get where Sarah Palin's going. But the thing I have full faith in, she can recover from all these missteps, which is scary. Right now, Mitt Romney sold something like $20 million worth of houses this week. He put them up for sale because he's trying to run as the common man with 2 really expensive houses as opposed to, I think, 5.
Maybe McCain can do that, too. They can divest themselves of all Cindy's wealth.
They said it was because of McCain.
Yeah.
They said it was because of...
Is McCain divesting?
No, they said that once it got out that McCain didn't even know how many houses his wife owned.
I mean, because they're tremendously wealthy. Those people are so wealthy.
But,
which is why he married her.
Yeah, well, and she was really hot back in the day.
She was attractive.
Yeah,
she looked really
especially.
She looked really weird and frightened and always like sort of like needing drugs and alcohol to get into public. Well, I mean, isn't that kind of the truth? She talks about it.
Yeah.
She's a very fragile lady.
That's true.
It's a tough life.
I have to say that it's a tough life for...
I mean, for a political wife who was essentially hounded on Washington.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. I would say...
By the Republican.
The Republican lack of affection for John McCain is just... I mean, he...
Well, because he thumbs his nose at them,
When
he's not running for president. And then he wants to embrace them, and I think that's the difficulty.
To me, John McCain would have won the election on thumbing his nose at the Republicans straight up.
Well, but as we know, he slipped on 2 points, the economy and then that blustering bullshit he was doing in Washington.
Yeah.
Which made him look like a boob.
Hey, the fundamentals of the economy were right like 2 days before Bear Stearns went under.
As we keep saying, people have been talking about the fact that the other shoe was going to drop for years. This was not a secret. There was a shared delusion that this was not going to happen. We all knew that there was something wrong. It was very, very simple, a very, very simple equation.
Right.
So, it wasn't a question of if, but when. People have been losing their shirts on the end of the bubble for a couple of years already.
Right.
So where was the surprise here? Except for a man who was so wealthy that he could not connect to the fact that the rest of us were the fact that the rest of us were living with. So well, he wasn't the right president.
That was the Republican line. I mean, if you look at Bush's answer to economic woes, it was always that the fundamentals of the economy are sound. And he was not talking about, nor was John McCain, talking about the fact that people work hard and are very productive in the United States.
No, that was the spin that came later.
Yeah.
They're talking about the actual function, the health of these institutions at the moment. And that was not the case. And it was coming, it was like somebody walking around with something that just sort of took them and shut down their arteries that day. You know,
I mean, honestly, the best thing...
But we've been eating pizza and steak and drinking, you know, Pepsi every day for 5 years, so give me a break.
And then they wake up and they're like overweight and dying of
a
heart attack.
Why did I get a heart attack? So yeah.
Well, on that note, I think that Mitt Romney's running the best pregame run for, but so did John Edwards. John Edwards at this point in running for 2008, right after the election of 2004, was running the best pregame run you could do for the nomination.
Well, keep our eyes open.
Mitt Romney's doing. Oh, John McCain is. I mean, John. Edwards is going to show up on... His wife is going to be on Oprah. He's going to be somewhere else. Elliot Spitzer has decided to reemerge.
He is doing a very interesting reemergence. And you know what? He was very tough on financial institutions and really good at calling people on their crap.
Yeah.
And which is
why he fell so hard.
Which is why he fell so hard, because, you know, when you run on a moral plane, of course. But I do separate sexuality from effectiveness in office. I'm sorry. That's my liberal side.
Well, that's what makes us pagan.
That's what makes us different from them.
What I find interesting is Andrew Cuomo is just running the same playbook.
Right.
He's doing more. That was Elliot Spitzer's. I mean, I remember hearing about him before I ever thought of him as a governor or a senator. And I was like, wow, this guy's doing some pretty amazing things.
He's doing some great things. But you know what? Again, it's sort of like all these guys. You get knocked off your pedestal, and maybe you're actually more effective because you're not so full of yourself at that point. And a teeny little bit of compassion is needed, no matter what you're doing.
I talked to my Republican friends after Spitzer hit the ground, expecting to get a whole bunch of, you know, you're a limousine liberal, you know, because... You believe all this stuff, but then you turn a blind eye to your own or something like that. And the response out of every single one of them was...
I am a limousine liberal. I love it.
The response out of every single one of them was, that girl was really hot.
Yeah,
and I was like,
was.
I'm waiting for this, like, thing, like, you know, this attack.
No, they did that to Clinton. No, they wouldn't do that to their own.
Clinton chose the fat girl.
Oh, yeah, the fat, neurotic girl.
God. All right,
just choose a nice, hot hooker who knows what she's doing.
All right, and on that note, this has been What's Left on... Oh, I keep forgetting to mention. This is What's Left on Is Good Radio, which is every Thursday at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard
Ish.
Time. Ish. And it is also on Podomatic, where you can download or stream. And you can get us on iTunes. You just have to search for What's Left Podcast on your iTunes, and get it. You can subscribe and get it automatically. Which I think you all want to do. You want Steve and Greg and Katrina sometimes.
And you know what? Also, don't forget to, you know, go on and criticize us or compliment us.
We take the comments. We did get feedback this week from our favorite listeners.
What happened? Further ridicule? And
yeah, he actually wrote two comments.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk to me.
Two long comments. Well, you know, criticism for, I believe, my statement that it was the purity test like that led to Al Gore losing the 2000 election, to which he wrote, heaven forbid people vote for whoever they want to. But my argument to that is, vote for Nader all you want. You got coal top mining, you got a war.
I don't really respect Ralph Nader anymore anyway. I've lost a lot of respect for him, not because he split the vote, but because of the things he started to say.
And overall, at the end of the day, like he said, how convenient Nader bashing, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Well, it is convenient because he puts himself in that position.
Yeah, he defended, he said that we're, you know, I'm paraphrasing.
And his tired racism, too. Okay, I really was bored with that.
Which one?
Nader's racism.
Is it racist?
Oh my God. Okay. I'm characterizing it as racism when he felt that he was free to tell, say that Obama was essentially campaigning to and for white people, and that he ought to, as a man of color, start dealing with issues that affect people of color. And I thought, well, isn't everybody's concern the same?
It should be.
So
outside of injustices, outside of injustices, which he's going to take care of.
But you know what? Exactly. But this is the bottom line is that, you know, if we keep going back to this, if you create our economic and educational opportunities that are the same for everyone, then and enforce that, you diminish the amount of problems that are resultant.
Every time that the
but I mean, how, you know, it's so convenient for people to simplify things along those lines. It bores me.
I agree.
I hate Ralph Nader now.
Wow. Well, we'll probably get something.
I'm going to reduce his entire legacy to that statement. You bore me, Ralph.
What else were some of the comments from our favorite detractor, who I love? He listens to the show. What else? We kind of cast aside the union workers' right to defend his pension, which is not necessarily what we're saying. It's more that they have unrealistic contracts.
Well, when you have a difficult situation and you want to survive and you want to, let me put it this way: stick to your principle at the demise of your actual job. That's not a very smart equation.
Well, besides that, I will consider. You can call me a right wing wingnut when I say no one gets the benefits the way those guys get their benefits. It's just come down to earth, people. People who are working for $40,000 a year with $20 copays, and they're paying $300 a month out of their $40,000 a year paycheck for healthcare. That is going on. The guys who work in the vault in my place get $10 an hour, and if they just took the HMO, they pay $215 a month, and that's it. Like, I don't begrudge anyone making some money, but if you're a skilled laborer, you have to kind of realize it's not 1960, and the U.S. car companies don't have 70% of the world's largest car market.
Exactly. And if it's based on a past paradigm.
The model doesn't work anymore. That's all I'm saying. I also really feel bad because the real problem with UAW pensions is the fact that they were raided by organized crime.
Mm.
It's not the mismanagement of financial wizards, and it's not the underfunding, of which there's a bit, from the major corporations. It's the fact that during their heyday, organized crime raided the pensions of the UAW. Now, the three...
How is that
that's
allowed?
That's my problem. And
how is that allowed?
Yeah,
how did that come about?
And under Democratic presidents, by the way. But on top of that, the... Three auto companies said the only way we can get out of our pension obligation is to fully fund it once, put it in a big giant fund, and let the union manage it. So we don't begrudge them getting their pension. They put like something like $1 billion into a fund and said, union, here's your pension money. Manage it well.
And where is it now?
I don't know. I mean, that's not my... That, again, but you know what the problem is? I like Alan Smithy. I would love to talk to this guy because at the end of the day,
no, I like the relationship we have now.
I do. It's great. I think that at the end of the day, if we
let's were not get any closer
to describe, no, if we were to describe the world we wanted to live in, it would be very similar. It would be extraordinarily similar. I think when you really talk to, I knew this from the Kill Radio group.
But I think that one of the things that's difficult is that you know. We keep hitting these points, which is that in order to change things, you've got to work within the framework you have.
Right.
And that requires manipulation of a system. That requires being politically savvy. That requires all sorts of machinations and activities that most people find unsavory, don't like, don't respect, but simply are all we have.
There. They don't even want to know happened. But at the end of the day, your choice is either that and what Obama represents that's relatively progressive, or the other guys. And the other guys don't believe there's a thing called global warming, want to drill baby...
Even though Australia's on fire right now.
There you go.
And somehow that, you know, and there's been there's droughts there, it's hotter there than it's ever been, it's, you know, it they are calling it global warming, they themselves say there has never been anything like this since there's been recorded history.
Right.
So, I don't know.
I mean, those are your choices. So I get it, and I don't have a problem with the criticism of me not being ideal enough. But at the end of the day, I can't deal with.
Well, I think that what's going to happen, though, is what these people are going to find out is when things slip a little bit further and they start to feel the bite, they might change their tune.
Maybe. I mean, the way I see it is, in 2000, Kill Radio was started as a shadow coverage of the convention in Los Angeles. And out of that organization came Kill Radio. And it was because that people felt that the Democrats were part of the same one-party system and that it all led downhill. And I get it, and they're pretty much right. And we had George Bush. And in 2004, almost to a person, every Kill Radio person I asked, now they might have said that because they had heard my political show and knew that I was basically, you know, middle left, said, yeah, I'm voting for Kerry. Yeah, I'm definitely voting for Kerry. I don't want to, but I am. I mean, do you want to be brought to your knees again like Bush did in the first 4 years of his presidency? I don't think we'd have a war. We might have another war. There's an argument that the Democrats might have started a different war, but we wouldn't be in Iraq. I don't think.
Well, you know, it's revisionist at this point. We don't know.
We wouldn't have the fucked up tax cut. There's a whole host of things we wouldn't have. We wouldn't have had a civil rights division of the Justice Department gutted. We wouldn't have had the weakening of the fucking tuna. One of my prized possessions is the Yahoo printout on how the Bush administration tried to weaken Dolphin Free.
Jesus.
They were so pro-business that they were going to weaken... You could still put the damn thing on the can, but you would still harm the dolphins. Like... I don't see the
point. But that's better, because there's more cruelty.
But the point is, they said the Dolphin Free sold more, but it cost more. So they wanted to lower the price of Dolphin Free by actually...
By killing dolphins.
Out. Yes.
Great. I love that idea. It warms my heart.
The public has a choice of buying the 69-cent can that kills all the dolphins around it, or the $1.29 can that supposedly doesn't. You don't need... They watered down the Energy Star. They watered down everything they could in the name of
please, these are the people who don't, you know, I mean, okay, you know, there's practicality, and then there's, you know, these are the same people who want to drill into the continental shelf, want to drill everywhere to get oil when there are other options which we need to simply focus on. Thank God we have a president who actually is pushing for this evolution. Part of our problem, part of the reason we're in wars is because of our dependence upon this fuels. Yeah. That is not a theory. People have been saying this for 30 years.
Yeah.
We need to change that, and thank God it's finally happening.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, but the things that he said in the last few weeks to me are about as far as you could go in the United States outside of a kamikaze mission, outside of I'm going to be a one-term president that has no power by the time I'm done with the midterms, but I stood up for ideals.
No, that's not going to happen. He's too savvy.
I know. He wants to be president for 8 years.
And we need it.
And he will, I mean, if he's successful, he will change the equation for a generation just like Reagan did. Let's face it. I think you said it. One of the guys who probably propelled the Reagan-era policies was more likely Clinton.
Yes.
Even though I like Clinton and I know what he stood for.
No,
but the whole notion
the facts
of government
are there.
Has to be small. The era of big government's over. Reform, reform, reform. That was Clinton's
Well,
way.
A lot of the deregulation that allowed this current situation happened under Clinton. I mean, whether that was the intention, it was still the, you know, unforeseen consequence, shall we say.
I know. Bill, love him or hate him. Yeah, I tell you right now, if you see Bill give a speech, it's awesome.
You know,
even post surgery, that guy will make you forget about all that stuff, and just he's just the man. I've had the privilege of seeing him from the nosebleed seats 3 times now in Los Angeles, and good God, when I was done, I was like, I wish he could run for 2 more terms. But
well,
by the way, his second act was stymied by the Monica Lewinsky thing. He was posed at that point. He was poised to do things. He was poised to run all over the Republicans in Congress.
Well,
and
they had other plans for him.
They got him.
He stepped into that trap, as we love to reference, but there it is.
Anyway, all right, you can get us on iTunes, you can get us on Podomatic, you can listen to us live on isgoodradio.com. Hopefully Katrina, who is out saving lives right now as an on-call medical doctor, will join us next week. Thanks for listening.
Good night, and good luck.